and I'm unaware of any Guru Sadhu Shastra about that particular explanation, but let's research. That's the proper response. Even in nectar devotion, we're encouraged to use our intellectual power, but not that's like, that's it for us. It's use it and then seek confirmation from Guru Sadhu Shastra. So, just a retake on the nature of my response. But I did do some further research, and I plan to do further research beyond that further research. I want to read again the verse and this little paragraph number 3 of the purport, and then some of the fruit of some additional research. So this is text 16. It's in the next to the last of Dhruva's prayers to Lord Vishnu. It's specific to the Brahman feature or the Brahma Jyoti. My dear Lord, in your impersonal manifestation of Brahman, there are always two opposing elements, knowledge and ignorance. Your multi-energies are continually manifest, but the impersonal Brahman, which is undivided, original, changeless, unlimited, and blissful, is the cause of the material manifestation. Because you are the same impersonal Brahman, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So twice it's the impersonal Brahman, and we know consistently how Prabhupada uses the impersonal Brahman terminology. And the word for word, vidya adayaha, Prabhupada is translated in the word for word as knowledge and ignorance, etc. Vividha shaktayaha, various energies. It doesn't use the word avidya. Prabhupada has put that in the word for word and in the purport, excuse me, and in the translation and purport. So here's the purport again. And then we're going to read Vishwanath's commentary, and I'll do some further research, hopefully, before we leave central New Jersey. Third paragraph. It is said that this impersonal Brahman is the distant realization of the absolute truth. Although apparently Brahman seems to be devoid of energy, factually, it has different energies, working under the headings of knowledge and ignorance. On account of these different energies, there is continually a manifestation of vidya and avidya. Vidya and avidya are very nicely described in Ishopanishad. It is said there that sometimes, due to avidya, or a poor fund of knowledge, one accepts the absolute truth as ultimately impersonal. And then it goes on. So what I'll read Vishwanath's commentary on this verse. There's the text, and this is Bhanu Swami's translation of Vishwanath's commentary. The translation is slightly different, and the commentary is different, similar and different. Translation: I surrender to the one infinite original Brahman, bliss alone, unchanging, the cause of the universe, within which are always seen successively various energies. That's this. Vividha Shaktaya. Various energies, such as Vidya. That's the only one that's mentioned. Such as, and then various. Having contrary natures. This is all within the original Brahman. One infinite original Brahman. Bliss alone. Unchanging. Commentary. Having described the personal form of the Lord, that's, 13, 14, and 15, Dhruva now describes the impersonal Brahman. I surrender to the unchangeable bliss alone, the Brahman, which is the greatness of the Lord, manifested by Bhakti Mishra Gyan to those absorbed in Shanta alone, situated far from the Lord, that's the Shanta Bhaktas, who are incapable of accepting the various qualities of the eternally conscious Lord. Though appearing to have no shaktis within the Brahman, are always anisham, seen successively anupurvyat, various shaktis such as vidya or knowledge. According to the amount of bhakti, the person will be close to the Lord. Then he explains. For those having a small amount of bhakti, through bhakti mishra gyan, who cannot realize the variety of qualities in the Lord, you appear first as atma, possessing vidya shakti. You appear as the purusha, possessing maya shakti, the cause of the universe, to those with a little more bhakti. Seeing with complete bhakti, one realizes Bhagavan, possessing unlimited shaktis, having all powers and sweetness. One who enters deeply in the Lord realizes the Lord as the ocean of grace, surprise, arts, beauty, and pastimes. Paragraph. We saw yesterday in the slides. Persons situated far from a town cannot understand all the details of the town. They only see an object in front. If they are somewhat closer to the town, they see trees. If they approach near the town, they can see it is a town with groves, towers, gates, houses, and flags. On entering the town, they realize it is a place for enjoying, with colorful ponds, roads, markets, intersections, arenas, dancing, singing, and instrumental music. And then he says something curious. The ancients have said, and the ancients is Shishupal Vadha. So here's the Sanskrit. Narada, this is the translation of this, the ancients said. Narada realized Krishna as a mass of light, and then realized that it was a form with a body. Then he recognized various limbs and understood that this was a man. Final, what are these shaktis? They are contrary in nature, though there are opposites such as knowledge and ignorance, creation and destruction, being born and not being born, being inactive and full of pastimes, being neutral Atma Rama, and being affectionate to the devotees. There are inconceivable energies situated in you. Okay. So, one other, so far, research. In Jiva Goswami's Bhagavat Sandarbha is one of the six Sandarbhas, and one of the declarations at the beginning of Bhagavat Sandarbha is Bhagavan has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. That is the nature of Bhagavan, otherwise he's not Bhagavan. Someone that doesn't have that is not Bhagavan. So, then there's this lengthy section with references to the Bhagavatam where the unlimited and inconceivable potencies of Bhagavan are referred to and then explained. And then the next one and next one. So one of those sections in Bhagavat Sandarbha is this verse. And he says a couple of different things in different contexts. You know, he's an acharya and he's making some points. So one of those references in Bhagavat Sandarbha is here Dhruva is saying there's various positions, Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama, which is different but similar to what Vishwanath is saying. You know, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, different degrees of bhakti can realize different things. So different degrees of bhakti can realize Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama. And those are shaktis within Brahman. It's not, the research isn't over yet. I'm sure there's more explanation of two things. The curious, I've not heard it before, elements of this verse is the source of creation, the cause of creation. It's Prabhupada's translation. Cause of creation. Brahman is the cause of creation. And that there's vividha shaktis. There are various shaktis within the undifferentiated Brahman. So, I plan to write to various scholarly devotees and see if they have additional, supply them with the references that I have come up with. Do they have any additional references to explain this verse? It's curious. So this is, so back to the starting point. It's encouraged. We were encouraged to try to understand these 12 verses are celebrated verses. Some of them have more commentary than others, but they're important, and so we're encouraged to try to understand, not by a speculative kind of understanding, but using our discerning capacity, the gift that Krishna, one of the gifts that Krishna has given is the capacity to discern one thing from another thing. He says directly in Bhagavad Gita, one who studies this sacred conversation is worshipping me with his intelligence or her intelligence. So we try to understand, and that can purify, strengthen, We don't necessarily reach any conclusions by that method. The conclusion is Guru Sadhu Shastra, but we're encouraged to try to understand. Just like Arjuna, in the course of Bhagavad Gita, over here you say this, and over there you say that. It seems contradictory. Could you please explain? So he's getting directly from Krishna. And so that's his Shiksha Guru. But he's the, you know, Parama Guru. And he's hearing directly. So that's our confirmation place. And it's encouraged to try to understand. So I don't yet understand. But I'm going to continue inquiring and see if there are other Guru Sadhu Shastra references on that mysterious text 16. And I'll report back as soon as I, you know, if I get anything further than what we've just shared. So it's two things. There are Shaktis, because it's stated in the verse and in the commentary, there are Shaktis in the undifferentiated Brahman, such as Vidya and others that are contrary. So obviously, Avidya is contrary to Vidya. Vidya, so. And then it's the cause of the material manifestation. So there may be other references that speak about that. How is that? Mahat Brahman is a plausible explanation, but it's the impersonal. Anyway, so let's see what other references have to say. Okay, so now, what? What do you want to do?
I want to take a copy of this slide.
Because it's not working?
It's not working. I want to put it there.
Oh, okay. Time out for technology. So we're going to be discussing verses 18 through 35 of chapter 9. And in this session, we're not going to be able to complete chapter 9. So Dhruva has finished his prayers to Vishnu. Vishnu is going to say nice things. You pleased me very much. And essentially, I know that you no longer have material desire, but I know that you did, and I intend to fulfill. Please accept. That's an instruction. And he fulfills the instruction. And you have to take it. Okay. Then we're going to hear some further mysteries. And I'm going to stir the mystery pot a little bit and see if you all become confused and baffled by the mystery pot stirring of Dhruvaloka. What is it? Where is it? And so be prepared. There's different references that say different things about the same thing, about the same topic. So in short, some references say it's a one-to-one correlation. It's right in Prabhupada's purport, we'll read, Dhruvaloka is the pole star, is Swetadweep, the ocean of milk, where the demigods go to pray to Lord Vishnu. So that's one picture. We're going to hear another picture. It's similar to but different from Swetadweep and other eternal abodes. And then we're going to hear something even more mysterious than that. So I don't have something definitive to say other than it's mysterious, and there's different renderings by different acharyas. And then, you know, our binary processor, the mind, says, well, is it this or is it that? Because if it's this, then it can't be that. If it's that, then it can't be this. So which is it? You know how the mind works. And then we'll go to, you know, the message before. Look at the big picture. And Prabhupada said, this is something I heard Bandi Narayan Maharaj quote dozens of times, sitting in Los Angeles at Prabhupada's feet, hearing him speak in one morning class. Prabhupada said, a sign of intelligence is being able to hold two opposite things in the mind at the same time. The mind can't do that alone, but the intelligence has the capacity to hold two things that cancel each other out, opposite things in the mind at the same time. So if you're not intelligent, you'll become baffled. And if you're intelligent, you'll go, that's interesting. So take your pick. Will you be hearing contradictory things? Even within Prabhupada's purports, get ready. Okay, so the last prayer was 17, so we're starting with 18. Oh, there we go. Oh, it's really slow. And it doesn't... Okay, but it's not even fitting on the... All the text is not fitting on the image on the screen. Okay, great, reduce it. The great sage Maitreya. So this is an image of Maitreya on our left. There he is again. And Vidura is on our right. Maitreya is wearing sannyas garb. Vidura is wearing grahasta garb. And he says, my dear Vidura, when Dhruva Maharaj, who had good intentions in his heart, finished his prayer, the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees and servants, congratulated him, speaking as follows. So now this is Lord Vishnu speaking. You can go to the next slide when you're ready. Oh, look at that. Okay. My dear Dhruva, son of the king, you have executed pious vows, and I also know the desire within your heart. Although your desire is very ambitious and very difficult to fulfill, I shall favor you with its fulfillment. All good fortune unto you. Bhadram te. So next slide. Next. Bhadram te means, let all good fortune be to you. The text below the image. Oh, Prince Rajanya Bhakta, your desire for power is natural. A Kshatriya's desire for power. It's psychophysical nature. It's that kind of natural. Therefore, I will fulfill that desire. Oh. But then will you not give me prema? This is Vishwanath. All auspiciousness to you, don't worry. I will also give you prema. That's indicated by the word api, that's also. So he's going to get his kingdom, and he's going to get prema. And he's going to get the result of prema also. Next slide. The Lord says, text please. Do you have another remote that I can use instead of having to say? The Lord says, you previously said, O Brahmana, this is to Narada, chapter 8. O Brahmana, please tell the correct method for me, desiring the best position in the three worlds, which has not been attained by my forefathers or others. Vishwanath, please accept that place now. Fantastic, thanks. Okay. So that was previous images, Dhruva speaking to Narada. Now the Lord is remembering that message between Narada and Dhruva, and he's indicating the fact is that Dhruva Maharaj was very much afraid in his mind, for he had aspired after material benefit in discharging his devotional service, and this was hampering him from reaching the stage of love of God. In Bhagavad Gita 2.44, it is said, Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam, those who are addicted to material pleasure, cannot be attracted to devotional service. Don't worry. The Lord assured Dhruva Maharaj that Dhruva would not be bereft of the Lord's love. That's good news. So, this is a picture, slow motion picture, of what has happened from the beginning, meeting with Narada, to now. This is going from mixed to pure devotion. Childishly, initially, Dhruva had material desires, and at the same time, had the pure aspiration to be a great devotee. So there was some question, some discussion, how did he get that? It came from his mother. But he had mixed, not just material. He had a spiritual desire as well. Generally, we heard this, the Lord does not award a pure devotee material opulence even though he may desire it, but Dhruva Maharaja's situation and qualification was a special case. In spite of having material opulence, he would never be deviated from love of God. We heard Jiva Goswami's explanation, because he had special intelligence. So that's the first statement by Vishnu to Prahlad, excuse me, to Dhruva. Now, he's going to continue. Whoop. Yeah. Now, check out this picture. Gee. This is an image that was created by Dhanavir Maharaj. We're now going into cosmology. This was done. He spent 2 to 3 years doing research from scholars in the different sampradayas of South India to try to do his own research on the temple of Vedic planetarium structure. from starting from Srimad Bhagavatam, but also other Vishnu Purana, Mahabharata, etc. And he interviewed very elderly scholars that for generations, that's been their exclusive focus, hearing from their teachers and their teachers. And so he interviewed them and got their understandings. And I'm pointing out this dolphin-looking image. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, in Prabhupada's Bhagavatam, the verses as well as the commentary. It's the Shishumara. That's translated by Srila Prabhupada as dolphin. And there's more to say about it. That the South Indian Brahmins call it a scorpion. Shishumara. That's how they translate it. But it's something like Virat Rup. It's a form that is not eternal, that depicts the higher to lower planetary systems as they move around the pole star, Dhruva Loka. And these lines mentioned already, according to Jyotisha Shastra and other Puranas, that which connects the planets to Dhruva Loka is air, vayu. And that air or vayu moves by another factor, which Prabhupada describes in the Bhagavatam as a wind, that moves the air, and so the planets move. Don't ask me details. It's just I'm repeating what research and scripture says, and Jyotisha Shastra says. So the text at the bottom. Gosh. Okay. My dear Dhruva, I shall award you the glowing planet known as the pole star, which will continue to exist even after the dissolution at the end of the millennium, meaning that in this case, millennium commonly means, it means different, Prabhupada uses this word in different ways, but the end of a day of Brahma. These planets shown in the image is from Bhuvar and Svargaloka. Those planets are destroyed at the end of Brahma's day. There's a partial annihilation, remember? And then the flood and all that. Fire and then flood. Drought, then fire, then flood. And then the flood recedes and Brahma's mourning and he recreates those planetary situations. That's his devotional service, his morning devotional service. Let me chant my mantras and then go create the universe again, the lower parts. No one has ever ruled this planet, which is surrounded by all the solar systems. I find that's interesting. It's solar systems, plural. Although Prabhupada elsewhere, note the contradiction, Prabhupada elsewhere writes there's only one sun in our universe. Here he's saying all the solar systems, plural, don't ask me to explain, planets and stars. So the notation in the upper left corner, this is Dhanavir Maharaj, because it's an illustration for the book that he published on this topic, or video that he made. there's Dhruvaloka at the top, and it gives dimensions, how many yojanas above the sun, because Vedic cosmology says this system of land circled by circular oceans, by circular islands, by circular oceans, and so forth, that's the plane of Bhumandala, and the sun is moving in a counterclockwise motion around the plane of Bhumandala. So then above the sun, in the vertical dimension of the universe, there's all these other planets. So above the sun, that's how far above the sun. You know, this Shishumara, that's this dolphin-looking artistic depiction of the Virat Rup, at least the Virat Rup specific to the heavenly regions or the regions above the earth. That dimension, this dolphin, this Shishumara, is this height, so many yojanas. And then all the stars, or nakshatras, that's a term that's used. If you look carefully in your Vedic calendar, the G-Cal, there's so many days in a Vedic month, and each of those days is a nakshatra by name and nakshatra by name. So nakshatras, I'm not an astrologer, so I can't say more than what I'm saying, so don't bother asking, I won't know. Nakshatras, there's 28 of them, and it's just different days that equal 1 month in the Vedic calendar. So all the stars, or those nakshatras, tied to Dhruva, so there's a certain, it's translated as a minor constellation. There's big ones, like, you know, in our Western, Big Dipper, Small Dipper, this one, that one. Then there's smaller ones. Those are nakshatras, or smaller constellations. And where those Vedic cosmology and then astrology, etc., is where those constellations, smaller constellations or nakshatras are during different days of a lunar month in a lunar calendar. So they're tied with ropes of air. Pravaha, ropes of air. Pravaha. So those ropes of air are moved by a wind, and the wind moves the planets, and that's why the rotation of the, this is the Vedic explanation, why the planets are moving as they are moving in a clockwise direction around the pole star, as the sun is moving in a counterclockwise direction around the pole star. Hey, it's Vedic cosmology. If you're confused, don't worry. Lots of people are. I'm just trying to offer an explanation of what's being offered to Dhruva by the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. He continues, all the luminaries in the sky circumambulate this planet just as bulls tread around a central pole for the purpose of crushing grains, keeping the pole star to their right. All the stars inhabited by the great sages like Dharma, Agni, Kashyapa, and Shukra circumambulate this planet, which continues to exist even after the dissolution of all others. So these are parts of the Shapta Rishis planets. They're in a vertical dimension below Dhruvaloka, or the pole star. And then there's other planets and other planets and other planets. So they're moving. When you circumambulate something with that something on your right side, you're going in a clockwise direction. And the sun moves in a counterclockwise direction. Although, this is commentary, although the pole star existed before its occupation by Dhruva Maharaj, it had no predominating deity. So now here's a little diagram that astronomers use to show where that pole star is. And the Dipper portion of the Big Dipper points to the pole star. I give you that residence, which is eternal. This is one of the meanings of the word Dhruva, eternal. Possessing the zodiac belt of planets, constellations, and stars, which are like oxen circling around the central pillar to which they are tied. This is Vishwanath saying the same thing. This place remains fixed. That's another meaning of Dhruva. For the duration of Brahma's life, for those living for that duration, in this case, kalpa is not his day, but his life. Again, these terms are differently translated. At the time of the final destruction, some say, little confusion, that Dhruva ascends to Mahavaikuntha, meaning not just that planet in this universe, but the Vaikuntha planet, some Vaikuntha planet. Even though existing within the material universe, Dhruva Loka has the qualities of Svetadvip, Mathura, and Dwaraka. So this language says it's not, Dhruva Loka is not Svetadvip, and Svetadvip is not Dhruva Loka. They have qualities like one another, but that's not a one-to-one correlation. I told you, get ready for some controversy. And in the BBT, there's an asterisk here. Kalpa Vasinam. The BBT translation says that's a day of Brahma. So different renderings of the same term. It happens. After your father goes to the forest, so he's now telling him what's going to happen, future chapters of your life, and awards you the rule of his kingdom, you will rule continuously the entire world for 36,000 years. This is an instruction, not just a forecast. And all your senses will continue to be as strong as they are now. You will never become old. That's a nice benediction, I guess, huh? Then his mother, a stepmother, Sunasti, sometime in the future, your brother, Uttama, will go hunting in the forest, and while absorbed in hunting, he will be killed. Your stepmother, Suruchi, being maddened upon the death of her son, will go to search him out in the forest, but she will be devoured by a forest fire. And naturally, there's a consequence for offending a great devotee, any devotee, but Prabhupada speaks about this, the mad elephant offense. That's sadhu-ninda. So she did it. And she got a consequence. So commentary says, because of having insulted Dhruva Maharaj, Saruchi would become mad upon the death of her son and would enter a forest fire, and thus her life would be ended. This was specifically mentioned by the Lord to Dhruva because he was determined for revenge against her. Now, he is on the other side of that, but he had desired it. So we should be careful about what we desire, because it just might come true. And Dhruva doesn't feel good about it. His brother's going to die, and his stepmother's going to die in a fire, going mad. Don't desire ill against others. That was an instruction of his mother. And it was a good instruction. Oh, there's the text. There's a delay in this little device, and so it's confusing. Okay, so the Lord continued, I am the heart of all sacrifices. You will be able to perform many great sacrifices and also give great charities. Remember his mother, Suniti, said this is what his grandfather had done? Swami Bhuvamanu, many sacrifices and giving much charity. So you're going to be following him. In this way, you will be able to enjoy the blessings of material happiness in this life. Not that he wants that. And at the same time, and at the time of your death, you will be able to remember me. Whew. So he'll be protected from having opulence because of his intelligence and the specific protection of Lord Vishnu. Prabhupada's comment, naturally, he reminds us of Krishna's words, Ante Narayana Smriti. I don't know what's going on here. Probably going to advance three of them at one time. What?
I'm going to do it manually from inside. Seeing if I can see your projector.
You can see my projector?
Yeah. We'll move it
manually. Wow. He can, he's got eyes that I... Ante Narayana Smriti. What does that mean? At the end of life, you should remember Krishna. That's what it means. Okay. Prabhupada's purport. The result of whatever we do in executing spiritual activities is successful if we can remember Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The program, this program of constant remembrance can be disturbed by many things. You've noticed, I'm sure. What are some prominent tendencies or emotional responses to our own that throw us away from remembering Krishna or being connected with Krishna? The list is too long, so we won't do that exercise. Maybe there's some prominent ones, your mother-in-law or your spouse or your teenager or something. The office. The most important factor in this verse is how to remember Krishna always. So the principle that is spoken of is the principle of sacrifice. The principle of sacrifice helps us continuously remember. And our primary sacrifice as the Sankirtan Yajna will help us in constant remembrance of Krishna. That is, we need to become attached to the name. There was some discussion after class yesterday that the name and the form are non-different. The name has form. Nama and nami, vacha and vachaka, that name has form. There's not only the deity has form, or Krishna when he performs his pastimes has form, the name has form. So the sacrifice to always remember Krishna in this age most effectively is this Sankirtan Yajna. So this is now further commentary on text 25. There's a little different depiction, but it shows, you know, the cup of the Big Dipper is pointing towards the Pole Star or the North Star or Dhruvaloka. You will go to my abode, worshipped by all planets, higher than the Big Dipper, and the planets of the Saptarishis, from which you will not return, having gone there. There's the Sanskrit at the bottom. Matsthanam, my abode. Sarvaloka namaskritam, worshipped by all the worlds. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Dhruvaloka, or the pole star, is the abode of Lord Vishnu within this material world. Now here it's saying Dhruvaloka and Svetadweep are interchangeable, synonymous, one-to-one correlation. Upon it, Dhruvaloka, is an ocean of milk, and within that ocean is an island known as Svetadweep. It is clearly indicated that this planet is situated above the seven planetary systems of the Rishis, and because this planet is Vishnu Loka, it is worshipped by all other planetary systems. So now we're going to hear something that's contrary or different. Seemingly, you know, either this one or that one. This is Sanatan Goswami. As you know, he wrote Brihat Bhagavatamrita and he made a commentary of Brihat Bhagavatamrita because it says many things and he wanted people to understand the many things. And then even the commentary needs commentary. You'll see. This is from the commentary, when Narada goes to Indra and he's glorified, oh, Indra, you're the greatest recipient of the Lord. And then he says, no. I worship the Lord, but then he goes away and I don't even know where he goes. Indra is unsure where the Lord is. He might be in Vaikuntha, beyond the material world, or else on the Vaikuntha planet, Ramapriya, inside this universe. He might be on Dhruva's planet, known as Vishnu Pada. Or he might be on the island of Svetadweep, in the ocean of milk. So that Svetadweep is not Dhruvaloka, according to Sanatana Goswami. And then, what's this Ramapriya thing? If you want to get really confused, let's hear about Ramapriya. This is, I'm going to be reading the translation and commentary for text 22 of this chapter. This is Indra speaking to Narada Muni. who said, you're the greatest. You're the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. No, no, no. With no regard for me, he destroyed my capital, Amaravati, and built a new residence above all others for himself. Commentary. Indra alludes here to an incarnation of Vishnu named Vaikuntha, whom Shukadev Goswami describes in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 8, 5, 4 through 5. Quote, from the combination of Shubhra and his wife Vaikuntha, there appeared the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikuntha, along with demigods who were his personal plenary expansions. Just to please the goddess of fortune, her name is Rama, right? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikuntha, at her request, had created another Vaikuntha planet. Which is worshipped by everyone. Paragraph. The eternal spiritual planet, Lord Vaikuntha, manifested within the material world is called Ramapriya, or dear to the goddess of fortune. It is located above all other planets, even Lord Brahma's. Strictly speaking, the spiritual kingdom displayed within the material universe is never created or destroyed, but because from our point of view the planet Ramapriya appeared at a certain time and place, we consider it, quote, new compared with the eternal manifestation of the same kingdom of God outside the material realm. The Lord may pretend to, quote, create it as his pastime, but he is only unveiling before material eyes what normally cannot be seen in the world. Something like the descent of an incarnation. There's the eternal forms of the Lord, and sometimes they appear, and they seem to take birth. It's a pastime, because they're actually eternal. So this manifesting of Ramapriya is unveiling to the world that which is actually already there. But it's distinct from Shvetadvip. Don't ask me to explain. But this is Sanatana Goswami, quite authoritative. It doesn't give the scriptural reference for all of this. Paragraph. Indra also mentions the incarnation of Vaikuntha in Sri Hari Vamsa, speaking after Lord Krishna stole the Parijata flower and defeated him in battle. Indra says, oh, sage, Lord Vishnu sacked my capital and then built a new planet above all others. Paragraph. As described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Vaikuntha appeared during the period of the 5th Manu, Raivata. This was a long time before our speaker, Purandara, assumed the post of Indra. Srila Sanatana Goswami presents two possible explanations how Indra could have met Lord Vaikuntha. Either the avatar mentioned in the 8th canto is an earlier one and met Indra in a previous day of Brahma, or during the 5th Manvantara, Lord Vaikuntha only conceived the idea of his new planet, but constructed it later, during the 7th Manvantara, now current. Huh. So, there's not a conclusion, but, you know, one of my questions to some authorities, scriptural authorities, and I will be specific, Antar Dweep, who is the, he's the head person of the TOVP, specifically the the planetarium aspect of the TOVP. And, he's a powerful, researcher and knowledgeable person. And so I asked him specifically, it says this in Prabhupada's purport, that the Sweta Dweep and Dhruva Loka is a one-to-one correlation. And is that how you see things also? And because there's other references. And he said something very interesting. He said, I've been pondering this question for a long time because, this is adding more confusion to the confusion, because in the Jyotisha Shastras, the scripture says Dhruva is fixed. It's not like moving and everything moves with him. It's fixed. It's the absolute fixed. But in Jyotisha Shastras, Dhruva Loka moves slightly. And as it's moving slightly, the planets are also moving slightly. So that, in his understanding, that pole star that the planets are circumambulating and moving around is not the Dhruva Loka, because Dhruva Loka is fixed. So if you're thoroughly confused, welcome to the club. And I'll continue further research. And I'm not going to guarantee I'm going to come with a conclusive answer, because Antar Dweep said he's been looking for scriptural authority that says exactly what my question is this Dhruva Loka a one-to-one correlation with Sweta Dweep, and he's not sure. Because Dhruva Loka is fixed. Excuse me. Yeah. The name means fixed. It's like the absolute fixed. He put in big capital letters, fixed. And the pole star in the sky is moving slightly, according to Jyotisha Shastras. And the Jyotisha Shastras are part of the Vedas. So how does this match with that match with that? Life is full of mystery, right? So to keep it really simple, it's a one-to-one correlation. Dhruva Loka, pole star, Sweta Dweep, that's it. Hari Bol. And that's sufficient. And Sanatan Goswami is giving us a slightly, there's similar language in Prabhupada's writings. We read, it's like Mathura, Dwaraka, this Vaikuntha, Sweta Dweep, and Dhruva Loka. They're similar. So it's, you know, there's differences, although similarities. It's right in Prabhupada's purports. Although, it's not a problem. In Prabhupada's purports, he said Vishnu created the planet for Dhruva. Now, it's not what didn't exist and then it exists. It's just manifested that which is eternal. That's how we should understand. Another reference. Hopefully it'll go to the next slide. Hopefully. Can we go back? Back. Oh, it's missing. You don't have the same thing that I have. That's weird. Okay, so there's a reference, another reference. Dhruva Loka is one of the lokas like Swetadweep, Mathura, and Dwarka. So, gosh. Okay, stop. Stop. We have to get back that other system. It was really nice. So the great sage, Maitreya, he's wondering, wow, after being worshipped and honored by the boy, Dhruva Maharaj, and after offering him his abode, Lord Vishnu, on the back of Garuda, returned to his abode as Dhruva Maharaj looked on. And next, there's an image of the Lord of Vaikuntha returning to Vaikuntha as Dhruva is looking on. And then, despite having achieved, this is a verse, despite having achieved the desired result of his determination, by worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, Dhruva Maharaj was not very pleased. He thus returned to his home. I mean, think of all the austerities that he underwent. Little boy, great austerity. And he achieved what he wanted. And he's displeased. So, although Dhruva had attained his desired goal from worshipping the feet of Vishnu through his determination, and he returned home, but he was not satisfied. So, Vidura is curious. My dear Brahmana, the abode of the Lord is very difficult to attain. It can be attained only by pure devotional service, which alone pleases the most affectionate, merciful Lord. Dhruva Maharaj achieves this position even in one life, and he was very wise and conscientious. Why was he not very pleased? That's a good question, right? Having attained the supreme abode of the merciful Lord, which is rarely attained through worshiping the Lord's feet within one lifetime, even though he was knowledgeable, why did he consider himself unfulfilled? Prabhupada's purport. The word artha vit, which refers to one who knows how to discriminate between reality and unreality, is very significant to this connection. And artha vit is also called the paramahamsa. Vit means to know, and artha means your self-interest. So you can understand what your real self-interest, you understand reality and illusion. He's not illusion, so why is he, he's a paramahamsa. He's so qualified. And he's feeling sad. So now, our theme is this: moving from the material to the spiritual. He's moving from resentment, that was resentment towards his stepmother and his father, and he even felt enmity towards his stepbrother. So having regret for our past bad words and bad feelings and involvement in duality, regret is a beginning step in overcoming that situation. So he's feeling very strong regret. This is Maitreya's reply. Dhruva Maharaja's heart which was pierced by the arrows of the harsh words of his stepmother, was greatly aggrieved. And thus, when he fixed upon his goal of life, he did not forget her misbehavior. He did not demand actual liberation from the material world, but at the end of his devotional service, when the Supreme Personality of God had appeared before him, he was simply ashamed. That was that regret of the material demands he had in his mind. He was remembering his previous condition. It's not, he's in that same previous condition anymore, but reflecting back. So, you know, whatever our lives were made up of before we became Hare Krishna devotees, it probably wasn't the same degree of clean as it is presently. Whatever is back there. So it's good to have some regret or some remorse. Dhruva considered himself imperfect. He prayed with a desire for a high position, but on attaining a benediction which surpassed that material position, he criticizes himself. And he looks really sad here. Although in pure devotional service there is no demand, pure devotional service, no demand from the Lord, because of his childish nature, he had demanded something. Thus, although the Lord also fulfilled his desire, he was not very pleased with himself. Rather, he was ashamed that he had demanded something from the Lord, for he should not have done this. Just remembering Dhruva Maharaj, influenced by a revengeful attitude towards his insulting stepmother, did not think of mukti, nor did he know what mukti was. Therefore, he failed to aim for mukti as his ultimate goal of life. It's the nature of material involvement. Sense gratification means striving for domination over material nature. It was kingdom, but it was opulence and sense gratification. Didn't look like ordinary sense gratification, but that was his variety, his Kshatriya variety. The whole competition between conditioned souls is based upon domination of this material nature. Dhruva Maharaj's propensity in the beginning was like that. He wanted to dominate this material world in a greater position than Lord Brahma. You can tell the nature of this Prabhupada's language, Prabhupada's commentary. He was very much ashamed and morose to think that although he had gone to Madhavan, given up the kingdom of his father, and had gotten a spiritual master like Narada Muni, he was still thinking of revenge against his stepmother, and wanted to occupy an exalted post within the material world. There's the broken glass on the left and the diamond. So here's this Vasudev state. Remember our discussion yesterday, the Vasudev state? Dhruva Maharaj was elevated to the Vasudev platform when he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally before him. The Vasudeva platform refers to the stage at which material contamination is conspicuous by absence only, or in other words, where there is no question of the material modes of nature, and one can therefore see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's an image of Vasudeva and Devaki being reunited with Krishna and Balaram. We know from the Janmashtami story, Vasudeva's mind was pure, and Krishna first appeared in his mind. So, the question yesterday was, when he was in meditation upon Vishnu within his heart, was he pure? And the answer is yes. Because the Lord doesn't appear in the mind of someone who's not pure. It's Vasudeva state, just like Vasudeva Vasudeva appeared in his mind. And when he came before him, Vasudeva state, and the interpersonal interaction was the further mercy. Continuing with this next step, so there's regret, then recognition. You know these four R's. Recognition, regret, reformation, and restoring one's position, reinstatement in one's position. This is a Jayadvaita Swami four R's, in case you haven't heard it before. So he's going to be focusing on the mercy that he received that helped him get beyond that contamination. His thoughts. To endeavor to be situated in the shade of the lotus feet of the Lord is not an ordinary task, because even the great brahmacharis headed by Sunandana, who practiced Ashtanga Yoga in trance, attained shelter of the Lord's lotus feet only after many, many births. Doesn't give that detailed explanation, by the way. Many, many births. Within 6 months, I achieved the same result. Yet, due to my thinking differently from the Lord, Pratak Matihi, I fell down from my position. Just a little appreciation of the language of the Bhagavatam. This term, Pratak, is used by Kapila Dev to describe devotional service in the modes. Pratak Bina is one of the phrases Prabhupada translated as a separatist mentality. Pratak Matihi, separatist mentality. Thinking differently from the Lord is a separatist. It's influenced by the modes. He's a bhakta, but a separatist bhakta. Influenced by the modes is a separatist bhakta. The Lord is there in the picture, but the interest is separate. Not the Lord's interest. It's not Shuddha. What to speak of Vishuddha. So he came to the Vishuddha by that pratak bhakti, by mercy and the empowerment that he received from Narada. So he continues his contemplation. Alas, just look at me. He just seen the personality of God. Has he been touched in the forehead with his conch shell and offered beautiful prayers, and he's sad? Huh. Then I become a pure devotee, you might get sad. But it's a transcendental sadness. It's an ecstasy. Just look at me, I'm so unfortunate. I approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality, Godhead, who can immediately cut the chain of the repetition of birth and death, but still, out of my foolishness, I prayed for things which are perishable. So this in yellow up there, it's hard to see because of the screen, but anatmiyam. Anatmiyam means, this is Vishwanath, that which is devoid of atma. The state of ignorance is devoid of atma, the atma tattva or atma gyan. Though the devotee does not ask, the Lord destroys material existence for the devotee. I attained his lotus feet just by having received Vaishnav Diksha, his mantra. I prayed to attain what I had vowed, which is temporary. That is my fault. The Lord, however, by his mercy, gave me a place which is not temporary. Very nice. So he is pointing to the mercy of Guru and Krishna to go beyond his material contamination. What could be the cause of my ignorance? Is it the influence of the demigods who became envious? Seeing my austerities? So what were the original instructions of Narada to Dhruva? He gave many, so many. You know, the initial was he gave transcendental knowledge, and then he gave practical considerations, and nothing went inside. Don't be in a get-back mentality. You can't please Vishnu by get-back mentality. Don't be envious. Don't wish ill of others. That's not the right position. You're a little boy, you like playing. Go back and grow up, and then come. You can come and try later. Very difficult, great sages for many lifetimes, and still don't achieve. He gave him a peace formula. Give up this friend and enemy thing. Happiness and distress thing. Be satisfied with whatever comes. Misfortune comes from your own past deeds. Just accept it. Have the demigods dissipated my intelligence? And only for this reason I could not accept the genuine benediction of the instructions of the sage Narada. I was under the influence of the illusory energy, being ignorant of the actual facts. I was sleeping on her lap. Under a vision of duality, I saw my brother as my enemy. And falsely I lamented within my heart, thinking, they are my enemies. He was in Maya. Big Maya. Friends, enemies. And I'm going to get them. I'll show them. This shows up abundantly in Prahlad's prayers and his teachings to his friends and his instructions to his teachers. It's an important lesson. And Dhruva is, after the fact, learning the lesson. Vision of duality. We make friends and enemies as directed by the illusory energy. Dhruva Maharaj therefore said, Daivim Mayam Upashatya. The causes of his bewilderment was his association with the illusory material energy. Remember that nice image of Maya. And down below Maya is the three personalities presiding over the modes. And just from our last year's discussion on Prahlad Maharaj, he offered similar instruction. Friends and enemy message. Here's one of his instructions. This is to his classmates. No, this is to his father. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose external energy has created the distinctions of my friend and my enemy. By deluding the intelligence of man, indeed, I am now actually experiencing this. Speaking to his father. Although I have previously heard it from authoritative sources, instead, we are all servants. Everyone is actually a servant, not an enemy or friend. And everyone is working under different directions from the Lord, who directs each living entity according to his mentality. So it's the same message, expressed differently by these qualified personalities. Now back to our Dhruva. I prayed for useless things, which are like medicine given to a dead person. Having pleased the Lord, who is the soul of the universe, difficult to please by austerities, and who could destroy material existence, I prayed for material enjoyment, since I was devoid of good fortune. And then he uses this metaphor. Because of my state of complete foolishness and paucity of pious activities, although the Lord offered me his personal service, I wanted material name, fame, and prosperity. My case is just like that of a poor man who, when he satisfied a great emperor who wanted to give him anything he might ask, out of ignorance he asked for a few broken grains of husk rice. So that's like the lady in the forest that the bundle of sticks fell off her head. But it's a similar metaphor. So now, after humility and comes gratitude, he's now going to move to appreciating the merciful nature of the Lord and his great devotee, Narada. This is Vishwanath's gloss of the same, so I'm not going to read it, just same. Being clever and very generous, the king gives more wealth than one can imagine to that person. Similarly, the Lord gave me his own abode to live in. Oh, I'm the height of foolishness. What unlimited mercy and generosity of the Lord. Dhruva then became completely paralyzed in astonishment for a moment. So the teaching for us, practical. If we desire material prosperity or anything other than the service of the Lord or his devotees, it is a sign of our misfortune, wanting fortune. Beware. So that covers our discussion for this morning. And we're ready for the next session after breakfast. Moving from resentment to responsibility is the heading. So he's contemplating, the Lord has left, and he's contemplating what just happened. And remember, he's a pure devotee. He's a little boy, but he's a pure devotee. And these are contemplations of a pure devotee that's regretting. Lights, please. He's regretting his previous material disposition. We're not pure devotees yet, but it's a good example for us. The previous material disposition, how foolish. And to whatever degree we're still carrying it, how foolish. And it's after 9 o'clock. So we've got to end. So if you have questions, you can save them for later, because we're going to try to keep our schedule.